Thank you, operator. Also, warm welcome from my side to everybody in the call. Please note that this call is being recorded, and a replay will be available on our website at deutz.com later today. Your participation in this call implies your consent with this. Joining me today are our CEO, Sebastian Schulte, as well as our Head of Finance, Oliver Neu. As usual, Sebastian will walk you through the highlights of the performance of the group and then hand over to me, as I will provide some more details on our financial figures. Sebastian will close our presentation with our guidance. After this introduction, we will be happy to answer your questions. Please note that management comments during this call will include forward-looking statements which involve risks and uncertainties. For the discussion of risk factors, I encourage you to review the disclaimer contained in our annual report and this presentation. All documents relating to our nine-month 2022 reporting are available on our website. And without much further ado, I hand over to Sebastian.
Thank you very much, Christian, and also good morning from my side to our earnings call for the first 9 months, 22. As usual, I would like to start with a few highlights on the operational and also on the strategic development side. So if we start with new orders, you know, we increased new orders by 0.4% if you compare with the previous 9 month period of last year, to a level of 1.52 billion euros. So that's not a high increase of new orders, but we have to keep in mind that last year we had already a record high new orders figures due to that strong recovery after the COVID crisis. If you look at the book-to-bill ratio for the first three quarters, we are now at 1.09, so still higher than one. But we're moving more towards a normalized level. So that dynamic, I wouldn't say is ending. That's too early, but at least it's slowing down to a more healthy level. And we also have to keep in mind, Christian will say that later, when he will go through the figures, that our order backlog is still higher than 800 million euro. So we are here on very, very high, very, very high numbers. If we look at unit sales for the Deutz engine, so without the Torqeedo product, we increased by 13% to 130,875 units. So that's quite a development, particularly taking in mind that the first month of the year were due to major supply chain issues still fairly slow, and we had here the summer months of July and August included as well. Revenue rose by 19% to 1.39 billion euros. So here we see higher rise of revenues than unit sales. See that later. That's partially driven by price increases, but also some other mix effects. What we particularly like is that we managed also to transform that into bottom line impact. So we increased EBIT adjusted by 35 million euros to 65.9 million euros after 9 months. For Deutz Group as a whole, that means we're like standing at an EBIT margin of 4.7%. So that's increased by 2.1 percentage points compared with the previous year, 9 months. And also, you know, we introduced earlier this year the new segment structure, Classic and Green. And on the Classic segment, which is pretty much all combustion engines, all diesel engines, including the service, we're now at 6.9%, so that's quite a good development because in the end, the Classic segment will be the cash cow for us to last for quite some time going ahead and also to fund the journey towards new technologies. So here the 6.9% shows we're on a good track. As Christian indicated, we have today published the first guidance for 22 earlier this year. We developed the guidance, but we put it under review, given the uncertainties out of that global, of that geopolitical situation, particularly the war in Ukraine. Now, with 9 months, and in fact, actually 10 months done for the year, obviously we have better visibility, much better visibility, and we know which of the risks have materialized, but also which of the risks have not materialized, at least for 22. So we see now a revenue range between 1.75 and 1.85 billion euros, and we also see an EBIT margin between 4.5 and 5.0%. On the strategic side, we have achieved further progress regarding our hydrogen strategy. As DEUTZ, we joined the HyZET research project. HyZET is the hydrogen combustion engine truck. We'll come in the course of this presentation to a few more details on that. Also, in terms of company leadership, the supervisory board has now completed the restructuring of the management board. We have now three board members aboard already. The fourth board member will join beginning of December. Come to that at a later stage. And in terms of product development, we had our own trade fair, so to speak, the DEUTZ Days 22 in Stockstadt in the Coreo. It's a very nice location to present products in our application segments, where we actually introduced and presented a lot of our developments, and we actually realized quite a lot of interest from not only our customers but also from media. So before going further, summarizing, we can say that after we already achieved some significant milestones in the first half of the year, we were able to continue this path, this journey, and we did continue to generate growth, and also we recorded double-digit increases in sales, revenues, and most importantly, we also managed to translate that into bottom-line impact. If we continue to the next page, please, we informed you already earlier this year in the last two calls on the strategy program Powering Progress, which we initiated. We're working here with four main areas of action: priorities, performance, potential, and passion. Internally, we're pushing on all of these priority areas, of course, but this year the focus has been a lot on performance because that's where we lacked most in the short term, and you see from the results that we are already on good track, particularly with the first steps implemented, and I'll bring a few examples in the next minutes. One of the, for this year, most relevant performance initiatives has been really the pricing situation, the pricing initiative, because as most players in the industrial sectors, we have been affected, or we are being affected, by this significant raise in energy prices, raw material prices, logistic costs, product costs, at different parts of the year. Different areas of that were more relevant than others. You know, we saw some initial spikes in raw material that have, I wouldn't say recovered, but at least relaxed a little bit. Energy is still a very, very big topic. Logistic was definitely worse earlier the year than it's now. But the whole package here is obviously something which brings a lot of pressure on any industrial company. And what we did, we started fairly early this year in approaching that structurally. So in the beginning of February, mid of February already, we kicked off here internally a project where we worked together with not only the sales team, but also our procurement department, our controlling department, the technological department, to define how we tackle this, how we manage to pass on the majority of those costs increases to our customers, and in the end, you know, to find workable solutions with our customers. And now we can say we concluded not everything, but almost everything. There are still a couple of customers where we are in intense negotiations, but none of these discussions are easy. But across the board, we are here on track to achieve those 8-12%, which we already announced earlier this year. But it will be also something for the next months. I mean, the period of stable costs and stable prices, which we all benefited from during the last years, that seems to be over for the next years to come. So that's also something we had to learn as an organization, to live with that completely different environment. And here we are on good track, and we are now much more resilient for similar situations to arise in the future. I mentioned earlier that we made further progress with our hydrogen strategy, and we're quite pleased to announce here this important milestone that we as DEUTZ joined this HyZET research project consortium. So HyZET, a set hydrogen combustion engine truck, and that is a consortium of very, very good names, in particular lead partner BMW, then it's us, then it's DHL, KU, Total Energies, and Volvo. And the aim of this project is that there is a truck being developed which is fitted with a hydrogen internal combustion engine, which is going to be trialed in transportation logistically, so mainly on site or on larger production sites such as BMW, such as Deutz. And what's our contribution in there? The idea is, the project is to include two 18-ton trucks, which are fitted with a Deutz TCG 7.8 H2 hydrogen engine. And these trucks to be tested in the daily challenges by using them in this regular logistics operation as set of BMW and Deutz. So for us, it's been so far a very important step because we have informed you on a regular basis on the TCG 7.8 hydrogen engine, which were developed over the last years and which is currently being used already in a stationary genset together with our partner Rhein Energie. But this now is the next level. We're moving it from stationary to moving equipment. And also we are opening here another route to not focus only on off-highway, but also focus prospectively on highway. So that's something we're proud of, that we're part of that. Investment volume for the entire consortium is roughly 20 million euros, and the project term is 4 years. So it's not only to develop our new business model and making money in the future, but it's particular also that with that participation, we continue to contribute here to sustainability in the field of transportation logistics. Reorganization of the board of management is now completed. From Dr. Petra Meyer joined us early November, a couple of days ago, as COO. She joined from ZF, coming in from ZF, and this is a new position to be filled. We didn't have a dedicated COO beforehand. But the rationale behind that is also that she will be in charge for production, for purchasing, and for the supply chain areas, and these are all very relevant areas, in particular also the area of the supply chain. Is an area which certainly, well, has been important previous years, but given the current change in geopolitical circumstances and global supply chains, we are convinced that this is a role which is in the future even more important than it had already been in the past years. So we are very glad to have her aboard and contribute with all her experience in further developing here our operational excellence. Markus Müller, who's been with Deutz for many, many years, most recently as Chief Technology Officer, he now also assumes the function of sales, so he's going to be the Chief Sales Officer as well. And that's also so far very beneficial because one major part of our transformation is technology, from the combustion engine, from the diesel combustion engine, to sustainable fuels, to electrification, to hydrogen. It's very important that we move from being a technology company to being a technology company with a better connection to the market, and having these two functions or two roles in one under one roof and one hat will prove to be very, very beneficial for our transformation. Timo Kutov will join beginning of December as CFO and personnel director. So it's a classical CFO function, but we'll be very, very happy to have him as a challenger of the business, as a transformator of the business, including also information technology, and myself as CEO, I will drive the transformation of the business model further, as we already started earlier this year. Looking briefly back to the Deutz days, mentioned before our in-house trade fair, where we had many, many customers visiting and many, many media guys as well. And we introduced, we showed here several products, several technologies in the field of EDOIS, the high voltage system. We also showed applications, like here an example from JLG, one of our most important US customers, where we equipped the telehandler with our alternative drivetrain technology. But we also show that we are strongly continuing to believe in the combustion engine. Here we showed our most recent development, the TCD 3.9, which is a product we developed jointly with John Deere. We showed our hydrogen genset, another application of the hydrogen engine in power generation. We showed the Elotrail system. We showed an electric mini excavator with CATEC. We showed an airport tow tractor with company Mulag. And first sort of product, which ranges more into ecosystems, the Deutz Powertree, which is a large mobile charging station for electrical systems, where we bring the charging and the electricity on the construction site. Well, we kept it on with the motto, we ensure the world keeps moving, and we had fantastic discussions with our customers, and this is really was a very, very impressive event where we managed together with our customer to talk about the future and to present our innovative products. Again, as I said, combining or including our conventional internal combustion engines as of today and new technologies in the future. So, that's a bit of a teaser, what were, let's say, the highlights of the last 9 months. And now I'll hand over to Christian, who will get into more detail regarding the numbers.
Thank you, Sebastian. Yeah, so let's take a closer look at our 9 month numbers, starting off with the new orders. Sebastian already told you we had a slight growth for 9 months of 0.4% to 1.52 billion. If we take a closer look at the single event of Q3, we saw a small slowdown there. Q3 order intake was down 9%, bringing the book-to-bill ratio to 0.95%. So as already mentioned before, we're seeing a small easing there. It is very different when we look at the different application segments. In agriculture, we still have a strong increase, growth of 24.4% in Q3, while on the other hand, the construction business was down 26%. And material handling was down even 38%, but here we had two U.S. clients with high pre-order levels last year, so it's basically something that is a one-off and nothing to be taken too seriously overall. Taking a look at the unit sales after 9 months, up 16.5%, driven to a strong part by the classic Deutz engines. As mentioned before, they were at 130,000. Again, looking at Q3 as a single event, unit sales for the Deutsch engines were only flat at 40,400. I'll come to that a little bit later. We had some issues on the logistics side, which basically limited us a little bit to how much we were able to bring out to the customer. But still, it was overall a very solid quarter for us. On the revenue side, revenues in Q3 were up 15.4% to 465 million. And that was driven by a nice increase in price mix as well as growth in the service business. Just to give you some color here, our average sales price for the classic Deutz engine in Q3 was up 17% year over year at roughly 8,200. And if you look at the 9 month period, ASPs were up 7% roughly at 7,700. This is also reflected, of course, in our order backlog. Our order backlog was up 34% year over year. If you back out the service business in the order backlog, you arrive at roughly 100,000 engines, which we have in our order backlog at the end of September. So that gives us some nice visibility going forward. Then a quick glance at our service business. As I mentioned before, we had nice growth also in Q3, but also in the 9 month period. Up more than 12%, 12.7% to be exact. This is also equally reflected in the new orders, which were up 14.7%. And also the orders on hand grew nicely by more than 60%. Of course, here, as it is a very swiftly turning business, the impact is not that large. But overall, we can say with the growth in the business, particularly in the part sales and the Deutz exchange business, we are well on track to achieve our service target of around 500 million sales by 2025. And what's also important to us, we were able to progress with our digitalization strategy. During the Deutz days, which Sebastian already mentioned, we were able to showcase a fusion telemetry project together with Talpa Solutions, where we add additional value for our customers, which gives them remote access to monitoring the engine sites. So we're working there with partners to have a broader offering for our customers. A quick glance at the revenue breakdown by region and by application segment. Maybe two things to highlight on the regional view. First of all, Americas with a very strong growth at 52% after 9 months. Here, the region clearly benefited from a strong material handling as well as a strong stationary equipment business. On the flip side, Asia Pacific, with only growth of 2.5%, here the relative weakness of the Chinese market plays a major role. The very stringent lockdown policy of the Chinese government at the moment is not helping business there. And unfortunately, the decision of the political congress in October seems to extend this this lockdown policy, so we do not expect any recovery quickly anytime soon here. If you look at the breakdown per application segment, what sticks out is, as I said before, the strong growth in the stationary equipment with almost 50%, but also agricultural machinery is still very strong with plus 30%. But important, I think, is overall that all our big end markets contributed to our growth. All were in double-digit figures. And as I said before, especially important for us is the service business, which also was able to grow more than 10%. Now a look at our profitability. As you can see in the slide, we were able to increase the profitability in the quarter very nicely versus previous year. We were able to post a 5% adjusted EBIT margin in the quarter. And in the 9 month period, our adjusted EBIT improved to 66 million, as Sebastian said before. Main drivers are the increased volume of business, the cost savings. We had some positive FX effects. But for us also, as mentioned before, we are increasingly able to pass on to customers the higher logistic and materials costs with our price increases. So that also helps us on the margin side. Our EBIT margin before exceptional items for the 9 month period rose to 4.7%. Net income before exceptional items came in at 52.2 million, almost a doubling of the previous 9 month figure. And not surprisingly, EPS came in at 43 cents, almost doubling the 22% EPS we had in the 9 month period of last year. A quick look at some balance sheet items. On the R&D spending side, you can see that we had also a significant increase, growth of 18% here, but the R&D ratio was stable at 5%. What we are seeing here is that we're seeing a small shift, and the classic part of our R&D spending portfolio is coming down, while the green part is going up. Last year, 70% of R&D expenditure was classic. This year, it's around 64%, and this trend is going to continue in the next years. On the CapEx side, at first glance, a very strong increase, but this is mainly driven by a single leasing business. In fact, we invested in a logistics center. This added 32 million to our leasing book portfolio. This is a long-term contract. If you just look at the brick and mortar spending, that was flat year over year. Another thing that we have to discuss here is the working capital development, because this was not quite as we had planned. We saw a very strong increase, especially in Q3, in our inventories, mainly due to some issues in the supply chain, but also we had a higher stockpiling level combined with the higher procurement prices. So in total, we saw an increase of more than 120 million in our working capital versus beginning of the year. And this, of course, had some spillover effects in our free cash flow, our cash flow. Looking at the cash flow from operating activities, despite the very strong EBIT after 9 months, the cash flow from operating activities was down roughly 80 million, as I said before, due to the buildup in the inventory level. And this, of course, is also visible in our free cash flow development. Net debt, additionally, is burdened by the high investments in this logistic building. The 32 million of the additional leasing comes on top here. So in overall, we now have 150 million drawn in our existing credit lines, but we're still, and this is the next slide, very solidly financed. Our equity ratio remains high at well above 40%, and we still have unused credit lines of around 107 million. So we think we have a solid balance sheet and sufficient financial headroom, including for growth by acquisitions, if anything pops up. Finally, a quick glance at our two segments. First of all, our classic segment, where all the diesel engine and the related service is put together. New orders up 0.9%, very similar to the group figure. Unit sales, already mentioned before, up close to 30% to 130,000 units. And again, here you can see on the revenue side, due to positive price mix effects, revenue disproportionately grew by almost 19%. Mm-hmm. Especially nice for us is that the adjusted EBIT margin was able to grow significantly, adjusted EBIT more than doubled to 92.5 million. We're now close to 7% after 9 months. And this after being loss-making here only 2 years back in the midst of the corona crisis. So a very nice turnaround. But as I said before, it is not we're not satisfied with this yet. There's still more way to go. And we'll continue to work on our cost basis to ensure that the margin here stays helpful. Because we need this business to finance our investment in the future. As you can see here, when we look at the green segment, it is still very small, but it has a negative EBIT contribution as we continue to invest into the future. The adjusted EBIT was minus 26 million after 9 months, and this is mainly driven by R&D investments. The Kato contribution was also slightly negative, but really marginal so. And as we believe that we'll continue to invest, especially in EDOITs and the hydrogen applications, we will need the classic business to finance our investment in the future going forward. That is my piece on the numbers. I will now hand back to Sebastian for the outlook.
Thank you, Christian. Before moving to the outlook, I want to just give a bit of an update on also where we stand with the energy supply situation, because you can imagine that's been a bit of a concern for us in the last months, like for most all industrial players. In Germany, we were particularly concerned about potential or effects from potential gas rationing throughout the winter. At the moment, it looks like we have that as a country a bit better under control. The gas storages are almost entirely filled, but this might change quickly. So this is why we as Deutsch had to prepare ourselves with measures, how to react, how to keep production going if there were a shortage. And what we've done here for a major site, for the biggest site in Cologne Port, the assembly plant, we have completed preparations which enable us to switch the heating supply from gas to heating oil in a very short term. Again, it's not a measure which you would do in the long run. It's not the most sustainable approach, but that would be an emergency measure pretty much to keep production. So we've concluded that. At the moment, I don't think we're going to need that, but it's better to have the possibility than not to have the possibility. Something similar we've done on our second largest production site in Ulm. Here, we are in the process of implementing an alternative concept also for switching to LPG, which we expect to have completed by the end of this year. And obviously, that's what we can influence by our own, by ourselves. Also important is that we're monitoring our suppliers. When it comes to the large suppliers, we have a very, very good transparency now with them, on the daily contact with them. So here we believe we're well informed. When it comes to sub and sub suppliers, the visibility is naturally a little less good. But in total, I'd say for the gas, if there were a gas rationing, we are prepared, and that was one of our targets in that setup. But also the whole crisis when it comes to electricity, it's in the short term mainly a price crisis here. We also stepped up again in terms of increasing the share of renewable energy. You know that we already use green electricity at all Deutsch sites since 21, but what we also now continued to install is PV systems, photovoltaic system. In Cologne, we have installed the first system, and we are in the process of installing further systems. Well, Cologne is not the most sunny area, so when we have installed this will make the contribution, but a rather small contribution, whereas on our southern sites in Safra and Sopino, completely different picture. And Safra, our big component plant in Spain, in the Extremadura, here we have now installed two photovoltaic systems, which actually contribute to a significant share of the electricity required over there, and same for Sopino. So we will use this also as an instrument, as a vehicle to further reduce our CO2 target by 61% compared from 2017 to 2023. So this has two impacts. First of all, really making Deutsch more sustainable, but also making us more resilient in that field, in the current field of the energy crisis. But now, moving ahead on the guidance for 22, we put the guidance under review earlier this year, pretty much before we published it, because that was exactly the time when that horrible war in the Ukraine kicked off, and we had a lot of uncertainty on supply chain and market development. I mean, still there is some uncertainty, but the uncertainty for 22 is going down purely because we'll move throughout the year. And as we said earlier, actually pretty well. If we look at our outlook for 22 now, what we see is unit sales in the range between 175 and 185,000 DEUTZ engines. The demand is much higher, has been much higher. The limitations were mainly coming from supply chain production capabilities here. So particular in the segment smaller 4 liters, the demand is significantly higher than what we can fulfill. So this is here the reason why we are in that range, 175 to 185. That translates into revenue 1.75 to 1.85 billion, including the service business in particular, and also Tokido and other smaller subsidiaries. We foresee EBIT adjusted margin between 4.5 and 5.0%, so pretty much in line with the first 9 months, roughly. And free cash flow, that's the only, let's say, slightly negative point where we currently foresee a negative low to mid double-digit million euro amount. Obviously, we are working on reducing the inventories and optimizing working capital to pitch here at the higher part of that range. But it's also important, in the last month, as Christian explained it earlier, We had to disappoint quite a few customers when it comes to delivery performance purely because of supply chain. So we did not do everything to optimize inventories in terms of, just-in-time production, because if there was a slight disturbance on the supply of components, that would have impacted the delivery performance in our customers even more. So that's why working capital increased. But now with the supply chain becoming a little more stable, it's the time to bring that better under control as you would normally do it. So that's our outlook here on the free cash flow. And that guidance for 22 is pretty much in line with the forecast we developed originally earlier this year, and we put directly on the review. But let me also sum up. I mean, coming back from the guidance to the first 9 months, as we've seen earlier, we are on track. We are on track with that growth in revenue, with that growth in profitability. We are not yet where we want to be. That must also be very clear. We as DEUTZ can achieve more. We're working extremely focused to unlock this potential, what we have. What makes me confident is, we saw it earlier on the segment reporting, makes me feel very confident is that we see how we develop, how we further increase profitability and business as a whole in our classic segment, 6.9%. That is if we take out, all the investment in new technologies, which in the past years we've never had in that range. That's actually by far the best 9 month performance we've had in the last 10 years or so. But again, that is not to be happy with that or to be satisfied. We need to be more profitable. We also need to earn here the money in order to fund the journey of the transformation for the future, but this classic segment, we believe, will be a cash cow for quite some years to go with us. So, I cut a long story short, on track, but we will continue to remain on track and to improve further resilience. We developed in the right way. So, whatever the future brings in terms of market development, we are well prepared. Thank you very much for your attention. I'll hand back to Christian and to the operator to check whether there are any questions.
Thank you, Sebastian. Operator, we would ready to take the questions.
Thank you, Christian. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. First question is from Richard Schramm from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. I have two questions, please. One is concerning the price effect. Can you be a bit more precise how much of this affected the increase in pricing, in the sales increase? Was it the complete difference between the volume of plus 13 and plus 19 we have seen in sales increase, or the 6 percentage points? Is this what you could realize from better pricing? And how does this compare with your target for the full year of 8 to 12%, which would leave a massive remaining figure for the last quarter? Is this realistic, or how should we put this into context here? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the question. So first of all, the 8 to 12% is always on an annualized number. So we only, you know, we started the negotiations in February, and the first increase kicked in with the beginning of March. Then continuously, as we moved throughout the year, we got more increases actively in the P&L. And obviously, you know, with the last negotiations being almost completed, so we've got a couple of customers where we're still in discussions, but all but those we have completed. So the majority of that round has been now effective from the beginning of October. So yes, you're right that the price increase effect is stronger in the last quarter than in the previous quarters. That's right. But the rise in revenue is not only due to price increases. That is a major, or that delta between revenue and unit sales is not only driven by price increases. We did also benefit to an extent from the US dollar. You know very well our exposure in the US is sizable. So the dollar certainly helped a little bit as well. It's a small double-digit million euro amount here. It's not as big as one sometimes would think, because with some of our U.S. customers, we also have euro contracts to not having too much exposure on the dollar. But to cut a long story short, it's two things: it's price increases, it's a little bit of the dollar, and slightly mixed changes. But it's not so much, because at the moment the demand is particularly strong for the smaller 4-liter engines.
So would that mean that currency was about 3-4%? Would that be a good estimate here? And further, does this mean that the majority of your price increases will quite obviously then affect the next year? So there we should expect a significant positive impact from this side.
Well, we cannot. We are not in the position to give a guidance or an outlook on next year. But what we can say is, obviously, what we did this year on the price side will, vast majority will help us, will support us also next year. But we also need to see what are the cost development for next year, because there's also a delay in the realization. And for us, it's important that we're always staying ahead of the wave. And, and this is what we did well by starting in February earlier. So let's not talk about next year. We are well positioned with what we did, because the vast majority of our negotiations with the customers included a sustainable solution, and that we try to avoid one-time payments as much as we can. So we are here on good track.
Okay, and the second question, if I may, concerning the order inflow in green, which was negative. Is this really only a basis effect, or what's behind this trend here? Because on the relatively low basis, one might have expected that there should be at least a stable or slightly positive development.
Yeah, the order intake as well as the revenues in the green segment is at the moment mainly driven by Tokido. And with Tokido, we did see a bit of a slow in growth. I think Christian mentioned it earlier that in the Corona time, that was actually in terms of top line a business which grew significantly, because in the leisure area, a lot of people then started to invest in their products for personal, you know, leisure crafts and so on. So that's slowing down a little bit. You know, from our several discussions that the green products in our core businesses, like agriculture, like construction equipment and so on and so forth, there we are still in the prototype status. So we developed or we sold the first, let's say, power trees, for example, this year. But these are still double-digit numbers and not in the thousands. So, yes, the reduction you see is mainly driven by Torqeedo.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your touchtone telephone. Next question comes from the line of Jorge Gonzalez Saudonil from Hauck & Aufhäuser Private Bankers AG. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for taking my question, Sebastian and Christian. A few questions from my side. First one, could you please give us an update on China and the joint venture with Sany? And then I'm also curious about the order on hand, the backlog, basically, figure. So I have noticed that it has increased compared to the second quarter, despite the book-to-bill was slightly below one. So does it mean that you were capable to increase prices for some of your engines in the backlog? And regarding the working capital, if I understood well, you had basically to increase your inventories because of the situation of the supply chain at this point. Do you have any visibility when this is going to change? I'm sorry if you already commented on this because I had some issues with the call. Well, maybe those there are already three questions. Maybe you can just go for them, please.
Yeah, let me start. First of all, good morning and thanks for the question. Let me start with the last question on the working capital. So what we have working capital increases driven by mainly by two factors. One factor is components and material, and that is something we are now starting to adjust. As I said earlier, and I'm not sure you were part of that call when I said it, but I'm happy to repeat. So because now with a lot of components, the supply chain becomes a little more stable, so we can here reduce the safety stock which we incorporated earlier. So that's one effect, and we're gradually starting to implement that. That's something we expect significant impact already in the fourth quarter, but it will certainly not be able to complete all that reduction to a normal level in the next couple of months. We'll need probably Q1 next year on top of that. The other big driving factor was actually the finished goods. And finished goods, we had a few issues with our logistics provider in Cologne. There were actually a lot of COVID cases, and that led to a bit of a buffer in finished goods in Cologne, particularly in July and August. We've solved that now. So here, the stocks in Cologne are down on a more normal level again. But this doesn't help on the group working capital because it needs to first go to the customer. So all these finished goods are now already in transit, particularly to the States and to Asia. So here we expect significant impact also by the end of Q4, but will not be back on normal level entirely. So that'll continue to be done in Q1. So reduction, yes, regarding Q4. But certainly not back to the low levels of Q4 21. And that's also why we are a little cautious on that free cash flow guidance, because we're doing everything to reduce the stocks again. At the moment, it takes some time to pretty much flow through the system. The other question, if I remember correctly, was on the order backlog and price increases on the order backlog. It is true that with the pricing initiative we kicked off in February, we also increased prices on our backlog. And that was pretty much a move which we had to do because, you know, we have this high order backlog. We have a coverage of more than 6 months order backlog for our business, and we pretty much decided we cannot only increased prices on new orders. We have top customers also on existing orders. And it was initially not an easy discussion, but at the moment it appears that the majority of companies in the industrial sector are doing it like that. And it is pretty much a situation where we didn't have an alternative. Now we are good, we're on track, and that might explain the effect you've seen in the numbers. And this, your third question was on China. I'll hand over to Christian, who's giving you a bit of an insight on that.
Yeah, Holger, as you may remember, when we looked at the development of our regional segments, I mean, the Asia-Pacific region is the region which the least growth, and that is basically all China. China was a very difficult year for us with the lockdowns still in place. If you look at our Sany joint venture, it had a negative contribution, a small negative contribution after 9 months. With also small negative contribution in Q3, so that remains a difficult situation at the moment. And as I also said, due to the contingency of the lockdown policy of the Chinese government, we do not expect any recovery anytime soon in China. So it will definitely also be something that we have to monitor closely next year. We wouldn't expect any too ambitious growth goals there at the moment.
Thank you, Christian. I go back to the queue.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Richard Schramm from HSBC. Please go ahead.
yes, thank you. Yeah, I just would like to know about this renegotiations you mentioned with the existing orders. How successful has this been, and what is the possible impact here in the improvement of the pricing of your order backlog? So how would you estimate has this helped to improve the pricing component here?
Well, we are not in the position to give details on what are the levels we negotiated with individual customer, that old customers that has also legal reasons. But I can assure you that the majority of the order backlog we were able to touch and or to change, and this you see already in the results up to which we just presented, and we continue to see this share increasing in the next quarter and then in the next year as well. The big question will be how is the cost development for the next year. We've seen the hikes in energy at the moment. We've seen the raw material already recovering a little bit. What's coming next is most likely an agreement between the unions and the companies when it comes to salary increases, IG Metall for Germany. So that will certainly have an impact for next year. So for me, the question is how long can we keep the prices that we now raise stable, and when do we have to get back again to the customers? But, and that, I see that as a positive thing, we have initiated actually a constructive dialogue with the customers. And at the moment, and last month, it's not the discussion with the customers, you know, whether we have to increase prices. The discussion is very much how much by how much, and how much you link to certain indices, such as energy or raw material, and how much you actually include the base price. But for going forward, we're not yet giving here out numbers. That's something which will come then most likely when we will provide the first full year guidance for 23 after our press conference in March.
Okay, and the indexation you just mentioned for contracts, is this now kind of standard clause you have in each contract, or is this still more the exception?
It's there is no standard in most of these contracts. What we typically have is a combination. We have a combination of base price increases, and then we have a combination of indexations. And it's the whole structure of these clauses has changed significantly. Up to a year ago, we often had, particularly the major, with the bigger customers, the bigger companies, we've had already indexation clauses, but they mainly referred to raw material cost development, such as copper, for example, or steel, depending on the weight of that particular component. What was not included in, I would say, more than 95% of those clauses was energy, because energy, unstable energy or energy price hikes like we've seen in the last 6 months, we were simply not used to in Europe, and that's why we didn't have it in. And that is something which is one of the key negotiation factors where you also convince the purchasers from the customers, because they feel the same effect on their side. So it's a combination, pretty much. It's a combination, and to use an energy component now, that becomes standard. How exactly that energy component looks like, that's subject to negotiation between us and the customer. And by the way, also between us and our suppliers, because they're having the same discussions also from the supply chain upwards.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from the line of Roland Kernan from Value Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my questions. I have three. First one is an easy one, a housekeeping question on the tax rate. You had 16% roughly in the first 9 months versus last year roughly zero. What would be the best guess for the full year and thereafter? The second question would be on your view on next year's, or the next year. In the last call, you were very optimistic after your talking to your clients, and the client were giving positive signals also for the year 2023. They are asking for free slots in your production. Has there anything changed in the last 3 months, or what is the view of your customers for let's say the next half year or the first half 2023. And the last question would be on Torqeedo. We saw a very big jump in unit sales in the third quarter. I guess you said that the earnings situation is already a small loss there. Could you elaborate a bit more on the earnings situation at Torqeedo, and maybe you could give us a unit number when Torqeedo will be break-even? Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Let me start with the first one. As you said, an easy one, the tax rate. On average, obviously depending on the revenues of our different countries, we always have in a stable environment a range between 15 and 20%. Why was it zero last year? Because we utilized tax losses carrying forward also from the previous COVID year. So, but you can always calculate 15 to 20% on average on the tax rate. We have in Germany, we have quite a high tax loss carrying forward from old KHD and Deutsch times, which we can utilize for quite some time, but you can, as you know, only utilize half of that since the last change in that particular law. On the outlook on next year's, and yes, it is right that obviously we're all talking about fear of recession, but our customers are still quite bullish. That applies particularly to the smaller engines. So it's too early to tell numbers for next year. We're not going to do that out of principle. So I will avoid numbers, not because I don't have them, but because we're just simply not prepared to share them at this point in time. But what we do observe is still in most sectors and most regions a quite strong demand for the smaller engines. The U.S. is the strongest here, followed by Europe, followed by Asia. Asia is a bit cautious. As Christian said earlier, China is still a very unclear situation now, but the U.S. is quite strong, and there are quite a few customers who are agreeing with us at the moment in fixing capacity for the full year. There are other customers who are prepared to agree on fixing capacity on a rolling 6 month principle, so first 6 months of 23 to fix, and then only, let's say, 80%, 60%, but then rolling into it. There are only few customers who are very cautious on that. Why is that? Because all our customers, when we talk to them, and you know, during the Bauma fair, I spoke to quite a lot of them. Majority of them actually informs that their order backlog is very strong for 23. Some even reaching into 24, others reaching into 23. So yes, if there is a recession coming in, as some suspect, there might also be some cancellations. But at the moment, particularly for smaller folliders, it's very strong. It's very strong. And yes, we have to, in our assessments, we have to be a bit cautious and put always in some conservatism. But the customers pull, and at the moment it's more allocating the available resources for next year, particularly in smaller folliders. When we see Torqeedo, you asked on Torqeedo, so we give only rough numbers here because it's part of the green segment. So on revenue, we are here in the 60 to 70 million euro in the year to date, and obviously on revenue with Torqeedo, the summer months are typically stronger than the winter and the early spring months. And we will not be break even this year. When we look at the top line for Europe, we had less sales for the smaller products. That's pretty much because there was a lot of anticipation during COVID. When it comes to America and Asia, we did sell more, particularly to our partners Navico and Garmin. But our on profitability, as I said, we're not going to be break even this year. We are currently assessing the outlook for next year, but it's too early to say. Outlook for next year will give in February as normal.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks a lot for answering the questions. All the best for the rest of the year. Thanks a lot.
There are no further questions at this time, and I would like to hand back to Christian Ludwig for closing comments. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Thank you all for listening in, and thank you for your questions. If you have any additional questions, please do not hesitate to contact the IR department. And if I don't hear from you, then we'll speak again at the latest in March next year when we'll release our full year figures. Thank you very much, and goodbye.